social nonsense.
We did not, repeat, did not trade weapons or anything else for hostages, nor will we.
Read my lips.
I did not have sexual relations with that woman.
That the Iraqi regime continues to possess and conceal some of the most lethal weapons ever devised.
If you like your health care plan, you'll be able to keep your health care plan, period.
With your host, Matt Stevens.
Oh, hello. And welcome to the Social Nonsense. I'm, of course, your host, Matt Stevens. You can call in at 319-527-6731. That's 319-527-6731. You can call in and talk about anything, even if you want to talk about what we're talking about today. We'll get to that in a second. You can talk about whatever you want. It's about social issues. Social. If you do that, we're good. We'll have a nice debate. I'll win. It's fine. Always win. Folks, got a lot to do today. Man, it's been a crazy couple days, right? Because we started, so last week, if you listened to the show last Friday, you know, we did a bunch on the Russia thing with Mike Flynn and talking to the ambassador. And, you know, we talked about that and what did Trump know and what part should that play? And it just sort of snowballed over the week. No, we didn't break anything. This was all Washington Post stuff. We were just talking about it and the implications of it. And it snowballed over the weekend and boom, boom, boom. And all of a sudden he resigns yesterday. And it's just nuts because the White House is erratic right now. Right. I mean, White House is every White House has stumbling blocks and points where they make mistakes on how they roll stuff out. And this could happen in year six. It doesn't have to be year one. It doesn't have to be day one. And every White House has had that moment where they send somebody out with bad information or wrong information or, you know, information that came back to bite them. And like, you can think about Benghazi as that, right? Because they sent out Secretary Rice with like really nothing, you know, they just sent her out with nothing and it ended up coming back to bite him in the butt and it screwed up everything. And that's why they ended up investigating a million times. This White House doesn't know how to do anything. They have people saying one thing at 8 o'clock in the morning and then something else at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Then it's something else at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Then something else at 5 o'clock in the afternoon. It's nuts. It's nuts. Who knew what, when and where? Now, we finally know the answer to these questions, and it's not good for anybody, for anybody, for anybody, because we find out that the president knew since January 26th, although I'll point out in a minute, thank you to Robert Mackey and The Intercept, that it was probably earlier than that. We find out that the former Attorney General, Sally Yates, warned them before she was fired for, by the way, upholding the law, as now two courts have said, including the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. Okay. So she was right again. And she warned them, not only did he lie, but it was so egregious, the lies, that she worried that he could be turned to be a Russian spy or would be blackmailed by the Russians. This is what she's saying before she gets fired. And he stays in. He stays in. He's got the arm. And we're going to get to all. We're going to break it down because the Washington Post did a great article today sort of giving you a timeline. And it's a really good timeline. But they left something out. And the reason they left it out is because it's speculation, right? But we like to speculate because we all know that Donald Trump isn't... Donald Trump is a smart guy, and anybody who thinks otherwise is dumb. Now, he's an egomaniac of the epic proportion, but he's not a dumb guy, okay? And he knows what he's doing when he does stuff, and he does stuff for a reason. Now, sometimes it's petulant, and it may come across that way, but it gets us talking about petulance as opposed to things that he signs and does, right? Always look at what they're doing, not at what they're saying. Okay. So the reason they don't bring this piece up, okay, is because it's speculation. So we know the call with the ambassador, I'm not going to say his name because I'll screw it up, and Russia happened, that he discussed with him on December 29th, right? That he discussed it with Mike Pence. He told Mike Pence about them, that he didn't discuss sanctions, blah, blah, blah. But if you look back, and this is not me, this is Robert Mackey of The Intercept. He looks back and he says, you know, the day after Flynn secretly urged Russia not to respond to Obama administration new sanctions, it makes it hard not to wonder if he knew about his aide's effort to convince Russian President Vladimir Putin to delay. Trump tweeted on the 30th, "Great move on delay by V. Putin. I always knew he was very smart." Now, if you would have asked anybody, even somebody who didn't really know what was going on, but if you sort of explained to them the situation and you said, how do you think Vladimir Putin would respond to sanctions by President Obama, knowing no other information whatsoever? You'd think he'd throw a temper tantrum, you know, take a couple pictures with his shirt off, be on a horseback with a gun and the whole thing, right? Just nuts. I'm anti-America. America's the worst, blah, blah, blah. Instead, he does nothing. Now, he could have done nothing because he knew Trump was going to be the president. That is a viable answer, and one you have to consider, that just out of the fact that Trump won made him not respond. But ask yourself this. Would Trump have not responded unless he was specifically told otherwise that nothing would happen? And the answer is no. The answer is no. He responds to Saturday Night Live. These guys, these egomaniacs like Putin, like Trump, they respond to stuff like this because they feel like they're being slighted. So for him not to respond to it is, it's interesting. And then for Trump to tweet that the next day, I always knew he was very smart because he listened to me and he did what I told my guy to tell him that it was going to be fit, taken care of. Now, that is pure speculation. I am not stating any fact whatsoever right there, okay? So, according to them, the White House, the fact that we have is that January 26th was the day that he found out, okay? I contend that it was before that. So here we go, down the rabbit hole. And this is thank you to Aaron Blake of The Washington Post, who's going to help us out with this because he did all the legwork and I just got to read the bullet points. That's not kidding. We've been following this from the beginning. So December 29th, he speaks to Russian ambassador, right? The United States. And despite Flynn's later denial and the White House's later comments, he and the ambassador discussed sanctions and the possibility of relieving them once Trump is president. Makes knowing that, right? See, so reading that, so now we know that he did do that. Doesn't that make that tweet different? Doesn't that make it seem like the president knew on December 29th, when he wasn't the president, that his guy was making deals for him as if he was the president? January 12th, for the first time, Flynn talks with the Russian ambassador, reported by the Post columnist David Ignatius. Few details are known, but Ignatius notes that if the two discussed the sanctions, this could violate an obscure law known as the Logan Act, which prohibits unauthorized citizens from dealing in disputes with foreign governments. See, he might have gotten his job later, but he didn't have it yet. And so he's talking about relieving sanctions put in by the sitting president when he had no power to do so and had no authority to do so. That's really what it comes down to. January 13th, in his first comments on the matter, Spicer says Flynn told him that he had exchanged text messages with the ambassador before they spoke on the 28th. The date later corrected the 29th. But Spicer said it was only to discuss logistics for a call between Russian President Vladimir Putin and Trump after Trump was sworn in as president. That was it. Plain and simple, Spicer said. Now, to be fair, I'm almost positive that's what they told Sean Spicer. I'm convinced that that's what Sean Spicer knew at that time. Now, we know that's not true. Well, we think we know that's not true, okay? We speculate that that's not true. But that, I believe Sean Spicer thinks that, absolutely. Because that's what they told him to say. And if you lie to your press secretary, He doesn't know that it's a lie. He thinks it's the truth, and so he goes out with conviction. That was it, plain and simple, boom. Now, he could also know. It's definitely both. See, this is the best part about this, is that both options are possible. They've handled it so catastrophically terribly from the beginning that both options are possible. It's like a choose-your-own-adventure book of disaster. January 14th, Flynn assures Pence, who was then the vice president-elect, that the two of them didn't discuss sanctions, according to Pence. Which is bad, too. Because then Pence goes on the Sunday shows on the 15th and says shows that Flynn and the ambassador didn't discuss sanctions. Pence said this on the Sunday shows. He's on record as saying this. I talked to the General Flynn yesterday, and the conversations that took place at the time were not in any way related to the new U.S. sanctions against Russia or the expulsion of diplomats, Pence says on Fox News Sunday. January 26th, the Justice Department, then headed by Acting Attorney General Sally Yates. Now, this is where it starts to get crazy, right? So this is the day, right? This is the crowning day, okay? So up until now, the only person that knows that they discussed sanctions on the phone are Mike Flynn and anybody who was in that room, okay? And Sally Yates. They're the only people that know. They're the only ones. Not the president, not Steve Bannon, not Vince Priebus, not any of them. Not any of them. Jared Kushner, not any of them. Mike Pence, nobody knows. Mike Flynn has not told anybody. Right? We believe this. This is the story we're meant to believe. That they believe none of this. That they know none of this. This is it. So January 26th, Sally Yates walks in the room. Informs White House counsel Don McGahn. I think it's McGahn probably, but Don McGahn just sounds more fun. Of Flynn's misleading statements. So she tells the White House counsel. Now, here's where it gets even more fun. Did the White House counsel tell the president? We assume yes. But do we know? Of course we do. Of course he did. It also warns that they were so egregious that he could open himself up to Russian blackmail. Given Russia knew he had mischaracterized the call to his superiors, according to Washington Post reporting. I mean, it's unbelievable. Okay. Now, Spicer confirmed the specific date on Tuesday, the first day that the Department of Justice sought to notify White House counsel, which was January 26th. The president was immediately informed of the situation. Spicer said the White House didn't believe Flynn had violated the law. None of this was disclosed publicly at the time. Skip to February 8th in an interview with The Post that would be published the following day. Flynn categorically denies having discussed sanctions with the Russian ambassador. February 9th, The Post reports that Flynn did, in fact, the next day. You know, it was almost like The Washington Post. Now, they've been really good on this, right? So they've been really excellent on this whole thing, and I applaud them. Because, you know, they were on the ropes for a while, The Washington Post. I was really starting to, like, really just sort of want to just get them out of my life. And they're inching their way back in, you know? And they've been so they interview Mike Flynn on February 8th, okay? And he goes, no, I did not talk sanctions with Russian ambassadors. I didn't do it. And then on the 9th, the Post goes, oh, but you did. So then in response, a spokesperson. Now, we talked about that article, right? I believe it was 9 people in the room said, and a couple more came forward and said he absolutely discussed sanctions. We talked about that. In response, a spokesman amends Flynn's denial, saying that he, quote, indicated that while he had no recollection of discussing sanctions, he couldn't be certain that the topic never came up. You wouldn't remember that? That's a huge thing to forget. A huge thing to forget. Huge. Like, you forget, like, oh, I forgot what time we told Putin we'd call him. You forget about that. You don't forget about accepting diplomats back and taking away sanctions for money based on getting involved in our elections. You don't remember that talk? then you're not fit to hold on to do your job. If you can't remember that part of a conversation, that very important part of a conversation that you weren't supposed to be having. Oh, and by the way, he probably did break the law. Until we know absolutes what he promised and what he said, he may have actually really broken the law badly. Then February 10th, and it just boom, right? It went January 26th, and then bajung, right? That February 8th, 9th, 10th, Trump says in brief comments aboard Air Force One on this, he is unsure of the Post report that he will, quote, look into it. He knows exactly what's going on. He's known for a while, but he doesn't. See, he doesn't want to do anything. He hasn't done anything. And they say that they did internal investigation and they found that he did no wrongdoing. But the problem comes where you find out that Donald Trump had no problem with what Mike Flynn did. He has no problem.
Let's face it.
None. Stupid Trivago guy. Jerk. It was not an issue of law. It was not an issue of trust. It was not an issue of law. It was an issue of trust. He has no problem what he did. Do you know why? He's not mad that he talked to the Russians about relieving sanctions when he wasn't supposed to. He was mad that he lied to him about it. Or at least that's what that says. But do we really believe that? Or was he mad that he just lied to everybody else and not Trump? Was he mad that he lied to Mike Pence? Did he actually lie to Mike Pence? Then it gets better. 5 p.m. Monday. Conway says the White House has full confidence in Flynn and seems to excuse him for having forgotten that he discussed sanctions with the Russian ambassador, right? not at the same time. We don't know. It also says around 5 p.m. Monday, Spicer says the president is evaluating the situation. He's speaking to the vice president relative to the conversation the president, vice president had with General Flynn, and also speaking to various other people about what he considers the single most important subject there is, our national security. First of all, that's word salad in epic fashion. That is epic word salad. It's fantastic if you like that sort of thing. And I do. It's impressive to string together a group of words that mean absolutely nothing. And they do it really well. So, Conway, on one side, full confidence. Spicer on the other. Not so much with the confidence anymore. Okay, then 8 p.m. Monday, the Post reports that the Justice Department has told the White House last month that Flynn had so mischaracterized. We already heard about this, right? So, boom. So they report that Monday. But that was the first time we heard about that. The White House knew on the 26th. We knew yesterday at 8 p.m. Last night before 11 o'clock, he resigns. And then we get to Madam Conway. On Good Morning America this morning. Now, she was meant to go there to help, and this is what happened. This is George Stephanopoulos, by the way.
I got to get to the bottom of this here. You asked to come on this morning at the president's request. The president wants you to come out and speak for the White House this morning. Do you know if the president was told 3 weeks ago when Sally Yates told the White House counsel that General Flynn had been compromised? Do you know if the president was told that?
I do not know that, George.
Do you know if the vice president was told that?
I do not know that.
Why not say yes? Why not say yes? We all know they know. It's just more nonsense because it looks bad. It looks bad that you took, it's almost a month. It took almost a month because you didn't hate what he did.
Do you know why the White House chose not to correct the record for those 3 weeks?
Well, again, you're presuming that all the information you have there is completely factual and who knew what when. And this is very fluid. I mean, the bottom line is that as time wore on, as everybody continued in their roles, it became increasingly apparent, particularly over the weekend when General Flynn clarified his own earlier statement, George, a statement that he had provided to the vice president and that other members of the administration, frankly, went out and publicly repeated, which is that he had not discussed a certain topic. in his conversations with the Russian ambassador. And so when General Flynn clarified this comment that it's possible and he could not recall, that accelerated matters in a way that was different.
Okay. Again, pure nonsense, right? I mean, it's pure drivel. But if you listen to, if you listen around the words, okay, if you listen to what around what she's saying is, she's trying to tell you that either the White House didn't listen to Sally Yates or didn't take her seriously enough to really believe that what she was telling them was true because she was an Obama appointee or a woman, whichever one you want to say, or they didn't care. Because it wasn't until this stuff actually leaked out that you really started to get caught with your pants down and you had to start doing something and looking into it.
And this is very fluid. I mean, the bottom line is that as time wore on, as everybody continued in their roles, it became increasingly apparent, particularly over the weekend when General Flynn clarified his own earlier statement, George, a statement that he had provided to the vice president and that other members of the administration, frankly, went out and publicly repeated, which is that he had not discussed a certain topic.
And we know he did. And we know he did. So he's lying. We know he's lying, right? And she's lying for him. And she's lying for the White House. I mean, that's what she does. But you hear her, right? It's so obvious, okay, that she's telling you that, again, they had all this information on the 26th of January. And it wasn't until this became a shitstorm that they were even considered getting rid of this person. Remember, a day ago, Monday at 5 p.m., Kellyanne Conway, the White House has full confidence in Flynn. And then we get to the Spice Man. The Spice Man cometh, because he comes out later, and here we go.
Did the president instruct him to talk about sanctions?
No, absolutely not. No. But that, no, and there's no, that's never.
So would you prefer you had not done that?
Well, I think the president had no problem with the fact that he acted in accord with what his job was supposed to be doing.
He had no job. Just remember that, folks. When they say that he was in accordance with his job, he had no job. Okay? He may have been the de facto, but he wasn't that yet. And he had no authority to do so. Okay? So don't let them meld you into this. This happened while Obama was still the president.
The ability to talk about issues that were important, whether it's that or the 30 other countries that he spoke to. That was part of his job. As has been noted by many people, that's what the National Security Advisor and, frankly, other positions do.
Yes, that is what they do. And they do it before the other president's in there. But here's the difference. They don't talk about policy, right? They don't talk about changing policy that affects their country directly, promising them to do so if you just relax for a little while. That's what the other ones didn't do. That's what they didn't do under Bush, under Clinton, under Obama, under Bush, under Reagan. They didn't do that stuff. And if they did, they didn't get caught.
They begin the process of preparing their incoming job by talking to counterparts, people who have previously held the job, etc. If he had not done that, there would be questions as to whether he's properly prepared on day one.
Conversation about sanctions.
No, the issue isn't whether or not what he discussed. There's been a complete legal review of that, and there's no issue with that. The issue is whether or not he failed to properly inform the vice president or not be honest with them, or not remember it. But that's the plain and simple issue. And when he lost trust with the president, that's when the president asked for and received his resignation.
That's the worst part of it right there, guys. That's the worst part of it right there. And you just heard him say it. It had nothing to do with what he did. It's that he lied about it. That was the problem. It wasn't discussing sanctions, because we've done a legal review of that and it's totally fine. But under whose law, right? Whose law are you? Who's like our law or the law that you wish to be, the things that you want done? See, here's the problem now, Trump, you got, because you promised that you were going to get rid of sanctions. And now you actually have to probably do that. And it's going to be very hard to do it knowing what we know. It's going to be very hard to do it, because then it's quid pro quo. Then we knew what was going on and you still did it. So you can tell me all you want all day long that this legally was above board. But I got to be honest with you. I don't believe you because I don't really know whose law you're following. I really don't. I really don't. And I know that because you have advisors on TV saying that the presidential power is very broad. And that's not true. Well, I guess it depends on how you interpret the Constitution. I prefer to interpret it as it's not a dictator. But if you think the presidential powers are very broad, then there's absolutely a way that you can look at what he did and think it wasn't against the law. To me, it's not necessarily against the law, but it's absolutely not above board. And it is not good policy. And it is not good government. And actually, I mean, it could be considered some form of treason if you really think about it. I'm not saying death penalty, but like some form, right? And couldn't that be on the line with releasing documents? Oh, and that's the kicker too, because what they're going to turn this into is a problem with leakers and it's the people who leaked it. And that's what really pissed them off. That's what pissed off Flynn. He gave an article to the Independent, I believe. I don't remember who, but he gave an article where he said, you know, he's really mad at the person who leaked it. And those are the real criminals. Not the guy who went behind a current president's back and promised to change policy that he put into action for having a hand in our freaking elections by hacking into our political people, operatives, computers, and the DNC computers. It's nuts. Through the looking glass, folks, we are there. This guy got fired not because of what he did, but because he lied to Mike Pence. Oh, I apologize. I forgot to do this.
Hail Trump!
Hail Trump. So, to keep on the White House, because it's what we like to do, right? It's really what we like to do. The USA Today, now this isn't as egregious, but it's still stupid and nonsensical and typical of the White House that we have, not the White House that we want. The USA Today is reporting that upwards of five of the executive orders that Trump signed into, law, I guess, technically, when they submitted them to the official register, the ones they put on the website for the White House, they're two different things. Now, I know what you're thinking. Why is that such a big deal, man? It doesn't sound like such a big deal at all, does it? Well, it is if certain things are changed where, see, the people go to the White House website to get facts that they can look at and ways to figure out how to either get a lawyer to defend them or, you know, help the other people. But if you're giving the wrong facts on the website, especially one that's pretty egregious. Now, some they say are just simple, you know, bit different paragraph numbering or grammatical errors, which from this White House is not shocking at all. They don't know the difference between two and two, apparently. And I do. And that's crazy that you don't. Don't you have speech writers? They don't know how to do two and two. It's nuts. So the one you really got to look at is the travel ban. Again, this goes now. This is the folks. This isn't like a typo. OK, this isn't having two, two and two. OK, this isn't somebody being sloppy. This is words that are being changed that changes the law. OK, these are words like in the travel ban, the executive order. Now, it's been overturned, but this is important. OK, the suspended visa interview waiver program and required the Secretary of State to enforce a section of the Immigration and Naturalization Act requiring an in-person interview for everyone seeking a non-immigrant visa. That's what was submitted to the Federal Register, okay? On the White House website, it says, referred to the provision as 8 USC 1222, which requires a physical and mental examination, not 8 USC 1202, which requires an interview. That is a big difference. And if you don't believe me, go through a physical and mental exam and go through an interview and tell me which one you want to do again. This is It's an epidemic that we can't sort of rein in, okay? If you watch John Oliver over the weekend, he brilliantly sort of weaved in comedy into Trump usage of fact and fiction and how he makes fiction into fact. Well, another way that you do that is you make it so the people learn it as one thing when the law says something else. Okay? Because I don't know which, if that becomes law, which do the law enforcement people get? Do they get the one from the website, or do they get the one from the Federal Register? And who looks into that? Does anybody know? Was anybody given a physical and mental exam instead of an interview when they should have gotten one or the other and didn't know the answer to the question? Because on the website, it says you're supposed to get a physical and mental interview, physical and mental examination. So if your kid, while you're being deported, goes to the website and sees that it's supposed to be a physical and mental examination when it's actually just supposed to be an interview, they don't have the right information. It's not supposed to be like this. It's not supposed to be like this. It's just not. And it scares me that it's not changing. It's not getting any better. They continually do whatever they want, and it's happening at such a fast pace that it's almost impossible to keep up with. And that you thank people like USA Today and all the other news media out there who keep track of this crap all the time, because it's hard. It's hard. But when you have different information on the website that's worse, that allows them to do more because that's where people go to get their information, well, then you've screwed us all. And you've screwed those people, and you've broken the law by doing that, because allowing them to give a physical and mental examination when it was supposed to be an interview should be some sort of breaking of the law, I would imagine. Oh, boy. I'm going to save this till Thursday. We're going to do a little... We're going to do some education talk on Thursday. I was going to get to it today, but I got a little excited about the Russia thing, and I just got a little nuts. We are going to talk about H.R. 610, which is like just so infuriatingly, aggravatingly being called the Choice in Education Act of 2017, which will distribute federal funds for elementary and secondary education in the form of vouchers for eligible students, and to repeal a certain rule relating to nutrition standards in schools. We'll do that on Thursday, I promise. It's very important, and we need to get on that. But it was just introduced, so it's got still a lot of ways to go. And so we'll get to that on Thursday. I do want to talk about this, because this is so much fun, right? You know, it's... If you know me, you know that I don't like white people. I mean, I don't really like people. I'm a racist against the human race is how I look at it, because people are really horrible. They're out to get anything they can from you. Now, there are good people. I'm not saying that all people are like that, but the amount of people that are like the way that I said are more than the other way. At least that's what it seems, okay? So you go to Oklahoma. You're doing fine, Oklahoma. Oh, baby. So they've been fighting these abortion bills, okay? And the first one, and this is like, it's so typical of Republican men. You know what I mean? It's so typical of the Republican, the fascist religious wing of the Republican Party sitting there and just preaching to you about what you can and can't do with your body. It just gets even better, because what they're doing now is they're literally, it's like a scorched earth policy. They're literally going to try to word bills any way they can to try and stop abortion. They're going to try and take away your rights just so there's no abortion left in the world. They're not going to teach people about sex. They're not going to teach people about contraception or the proper ways to use contraception or about birth control. They're not going to teach people about that. They're going to send them out into the world ignorant, hope they don't have sex when they shouldn't, and then hope they don't get pregnant. And if they do, well, then you're just stuck with the baby. It'd be like handing somebody a gun and not teaching them how to use it, and then saying, go to war, kid, have fun. I know it's not the same thing. It's ludicrous to think that's the same thing, but you get my point, because love is kind of a war, just more of a mental war than a physical one, or it can be a physical one too. So Oklahoma just, you know, they're doing their job for the radical right, right? They're doing their part. They're testing the waters. So they have House Bill 1549. And under a measure, a woman would be blocked. Now, this is from The Intercept. A woman would be blocked from aborting a fetus because it has or is suspected of having a genetic abnormality, regardless of how early the sought termination. So this would eliminate late-term abortion policy and decide for them that if you're, even if you were going to have an abortion anyway, even if you thought from the moment you found out you got pregnant, you were going to have an abortion before they even found out that your child had any sort of anomaly or genetic abnormality, you are going to get an abortion. You wouldn't be able to under this law. You lack the intelligence to make this decision for yourself. You got all the hormones and stuff going crazy. So there you go. That's one, right? Now, this was, it didn't make it in, but these are things that they're putting up. These are things that they're trying. Now, they would all probably get knocked down by the Supreme Court, but do we really know if that's true anymore? I mean, do we really know? Would they even take the case? Would they want to take the case? And then you get to the good one, right? Then you get to the one that really just makes you want to bash your head into the wall, right? This is HB 1441. It was written by freshman Rep. Justin Humphrey. Sounds like a real rack of nozzles. It would require a woman seeking an abortion first, before anything else, to obtain written permission from her sexual partner. I mean, you know, when you think about the balls it takes to write that law, when you think about the epic stones it takes to write that law, because basically what you're saying, there's no nuance here. There is none. You are saying, woman, I don't give a crap that it's 2017. You need a man's approval to get this abortion. And if you don't have a man's approval to get this abortion, well, guess what? You're not getting this abortion. It doesn't matter that it's your body. It doesn't matter that it's your uterus. It doesn't even matter that it is your kid. What matters is that the man has the decision. The man makes the decision, and he decides whether or not you get to have that baby, not you. That's good stuff. You have successfully, one, your wife suffers from Stockholm Syndrome of some sort, or hates herself. And I know that you're saying, man, it's not nice to say that about people. It's just not nice, and I don't care. Because I can't believe otherwise. I can't believe that a woman would allow a man to write this bill. I can't believe that a woman married to a man who wrote this bill would still be married to this man. Unless she was so, just so, her psyche had been so beaten into submission to think that she needs to be validated by a man. And this is a man saying that. So, listen, these probably won't be made into laws, but we keep you abreast of the situation because it's to remind you that this is a struggle every day. It's a struggle every day. And I don't have to tell you this. I'm a guy. I don't have to struggle with this every day. Women have to struggle with this every day. But it's incumbent upon us as men to help them so that they don't struggle alone. See? That's how you help. You don't make them sign a piece of paper. You make them, let them make their own decisions. Because that's what they are. They're people. And they have these things in their head. They're called brains. And they know how to use them. They have deductive reasoning and everything. Opposable thumbs. It's an amazing thing, a woman. You should look at them. They're really awesome. You should really look at them. And to be honest with you, if you like the, now listen, there's a woman for everyone, right? There's something for everybody. We love things for everybody, don't we? Don't we? Personally, I wouldn't want to date a woman who couldn't make that decision. Yay or nay. I wouldn't want a woman who needed my validation to make that decision. If you want to make it together, that's one thing. That is different. But who needed my validation to make that decision? I don't want that woman. Somebody might. And maybe that's the woman who's married to this guy. Whatever you want, dear. That is a woman that I cannot take. So good luck, ladies. We're here for you. We'll keep you abreast of all the situation going on throughout the country. And anytime they try to introduce these bills, we let you know about it so that you can call who you need to call to let them know that it is messed up that you're doing that. Chachi. That's right, folks. We're going to play a little bit more because this is going to get you up. Here we go. Break it down. Oh, and there's Al. Oh, fantastic. So, why are we playing the Joni Lovechachi theme song, which is fantastic? Which may have been the birth of karaoke, by the way. I'm not saying that they karaoke that song, but that's what it looks like. If you watch the opening of that show, it looks like they're doing karaoke at Arnold's. Oh, baby. So, Scott Baio is in the news because Scott Baio's a douche. We all know that. And Scott Baio, we will never be rid of Scott Baio. And this is our fun news story of the day because it just proves again how stupid people are, and we always like to prove how stupid people are. And you know what? The best part about Scott Baio is he never lets us down.
Just when I thought he couldn't be any more the worst, he out the worst himself.
He out the worst himself! And you gotta love it, right? So Nordstrom's takes the Ivanka Trump stuff off the shelves, right? People are up in arms. Oh, I can't believe it. Nordstrom's is fascist. They're going, it's Hitler. Everything's Hitler. So Scott Baio tweets a picture of his Nordstrom bill where he spent $30,000 apparently in 2016 in Nordstrom's. Scott, first of all, buddy, you're doing much better than I ever thought. I thought after Charles in Charge, which isn't really an instigation anymore, was done, you were done. I haven't seen you anymore unless Trump's funding you, which could definitely be possible. So he tweets out his copy of his bill and he says, "Dear at Nordstrom's, never again." Here's the problem. Never again was a slogan. I mean, I hate to put it in that term, but that's kind of what it was, right? It was a slogan used by the Jewish resistance fighters in the Nazi ghettos. And it actually was adopted by the official motto of the Jewish Defense League. Never again. And it was never again are we going to let this happen. Never again be hatred. Never again be hated. People say never again jail and torture. Never again the suffering of innocent people. That's not me. That's Eli Weissel. That's a Holocaust survivor. And I probably pronounced that name wrong. And I apologize, especially to him.
90 seconds.
So Scott Baio tweets this. And it just shows how stupid Scott Baio is all the time, right? It just shows how stupid Scott Baio is. Or he's cleverer than we thought. Because later that day, to prove he's not a hater of the Jewish people, he tweets a picture of him with a rabbi. It's the black friend, the Jewish edition. And this is what you like about guys like Scott Baio, right? Because they just don't get it. They don't get
60
it.
60 seconds.
You can have friends all day. Nobody cares if you have friends. Everybody's got friends. It's how you treat people. It's how you treat history. It's how you treat people who have died for senseless and ignorant reasons, and you using never again to combine the plight to make the plight of Ivanka Trump having her clothes taken off the rack at freaking Nordstrom to the Holocaust and what those people went through is just beyond the pale. And so to you, Scott Baio, and to everybody for this show, thank you so much for listening. We say
farewell and adieu to you fair Spanish ladies. Farewell and adieu, you ladies of Spain. For we've received orders for to sail back to Boston. And so nevermore shall we see you again.